Yes, everyone, what's going on? My name's Stephen Howson, and this is a Premier League preview, sort of, but really it's a vent about what's going on at United at the moment and how the problems are a little bit deeper than just Jose Mourinho alone, which is what I think a lot of people are pinning it on. So what exactly is wrong at Manchester United? Now, I've said a few times that I think United lack leadership at all levels, and that's why this job is not just going to be fixed by changing the manager alone. Look at a few places that change their manager a lot. So Chelsea, Real Madrid, often the manager comes into those clubs and they win the league. That's what they do quite a lot. A brand new manager comes in and they win the league, which means that the players are good, and it means that that manager coming in, and sometimes the manager that's just left as well, are also good enough. Then something happens after they win the league in their first season and they don't retain it, and then that manager is sacked. Are the players suddenly not good enough? As a manager just to turn to shit overnight, and after winning the league, which is never a fluke, winning the league ever, are they able to not retain it next season? What is the reason for that? It just doesn't happen that you turn to a bad manager overnight after winning a title somewhere. In the time that Sir Alex was at Manchester United, City cycled through 19 managers. Were all 19 managers bad appointments? I find it extremely hard, if not impossible, to believe that 19 consecutive managers weren't good enough. And Pep Guardiola is the first one that they've had since 1986 that was any good. I absolutely, point blank, refuse to accept that that is the case. I can't say specifically what is the issue at all of those clubs, and I don't know each of them well enough to be able to say why each of those managers couldn't find sustained success. But I think what I have done is I've identified what I think is needed to make a manager successful and therefore a club successful in the long term. And although these are rare, these long-term managers, these dynasty managers, that's what I think everyone should be trying to achieve, and that's what I think I would like Manchester United to achieve, and I think every single club should be looking for that sustained success. Now, that would be different if you're Fleetwood, that would be different if you're Real Madrid, that would be different if you're Manchester United. These are different levels of success and different metrics of success, no matter where the club is. You look at what Salford City have done with their recent rise all the way up to the Conference North. That's success for them. You know, they're not probably, I don't think anyway, probably not looking at where they're going to come in the Champions League in 5 or 10 years' time. I don't think that's on their radar. Success is comparative for each of those different clubs. But anyway, the three things that I think that are the key to a good, successful appointment of a manager, three things that he's got to be given: patience, resources, and belief. And I'll get into each of those individually. So patience. Sir Alex took over Manchester United at a time when, on the face of it, we're a pretty stable club. We was paying good money for signings. We signed Brian Robson for £1 million, which made Sir Matt Busby lose his mind and resign as president of the club in protest. We were successful in FA Cups. Big run had us finishing third and fourth in the league and putting together an incredible run at the start of the season with some real fan favourites in the side, like a team that's actually extremely good on paper, but he couldn't get us over the line and win a championship for us. He played entertaining football. He was very unlucky with injuries in a couple of those seasons in the league. Now, Fergie came in and the club's league position absolutely plummeted down. We finished 11th, and then we saw a temporary rise where he came second, but then we finished 11th and 13th. Now, if you overlay today, and the football was dour and it was uninspiring, and if you overlay today's mentality over that, a manager that's come second and then 11th and 13th, what you all didn't know, I don't even need to ask you, do I? You know what happens to a manager that comes second and then 11th and 13th. You'll, guy's a fraud, he's took the club backwards, he doesn't know what he's doing, he's past it, could do it in Scotland, can't do it in England. You can see all of the headlines that you would see about that manager there today. If we finish second like we did last season and Jose finishes 11th this season, is there any hope whatsoever of him keeping his job into next season? And if we finish 13th next season, is there any hope of him keeping his job beyond that? Absolutely not. So why was there patience from Martin Edwards? Because of the other things that are playing into this. So that's why I'm going to get into all of these things. Now, times have changed. Absolutely, it is a little bit different, but we'd gone from a manager that was finishing third and winning trophies to a manager that had now taken us to dour football, because Big Ron was all about the attack. Dour football, poor results, not competing in cups. Why didn't Sir Alex lose his job? Because the banners did exist at the time. People were demanding the manager out. Terah Fergie and all that lot. Very famous. But there are things at play that, with Sir Alex, that we didn't know about. Certainly the public at the time didn't know about. Which takes me to my next area of support, which a manager has to have, and that's resources. Now, every manager needs resources. I'm not just talking about money for deals. I'm talking about resources. Can be scouts, can be coaches, can be training facilities, things like that. When Sir Alex took over the club, the club was in need of a massive overhaul in so many ways. Think of what we started off with, training at the Cliff on a pitch that was rain-sodden and often muddy, to the world-class facilities that Sir Alex oversaw the move into at Carrington during his time here. It's a world apart, not just training facilities, but medical facilities and everything on top of that, and a canteen and nutritionists and all the sports science that goes into what's being there. One of the first things Sir Alex did when he took over United was to overhaul a scouting department, which ultimately led to the fruition that we saw with the Class of 92. The foundations of those additional scouts going out and watching youth football led to the literal implementation of first team players 7-8 years later. Just a direct line. Because Sir Alex came in and he saw things. And one of the things that he was doing in that, overhauling the scout department, is what led Martin Edwards onto the next area of support that a manager needs, which is belief. Martin Edwards and the board at United believed in Sir Alex, and they believed in his vision, and they believed in the work that he was doing behind the scenes, and they looked at what was happening on the pitch as one tiny small aspect of what happens at a football club, and they believed he would eventually get it right. And he eventually got it right. I think it's probably a bit of an understatement, but he got it right. Big Ron was fired because in the summer before he was sacked, he offered his resignation. He had lost the belief in himself. Now, Sir Alex had belief in himself and he had the vision, and the board knew and reciprocated that belief, both in him and his vision for the club. And you need all three things to be a success: patience, resources, and belief. Now, if I look at Jose Mourinho, LVG, Moyes, I see parts of those are missing. You can argue about resources. You can say how much he spent. Like I said, so at least one in Paul Pogba was someone that Jose Mourinho was given rather than signed. Because we know that the Paul Pogba deal took 2 years to materialise, which means it might have even started while David Moyes was still the manager at United. The fact remains he didn't get some of his players. He did get others. He rides on the wave of previous managers and Edward Wood's Galactico signings, the likes of Di Maria and Pogba and other players that are sticking around at the club. Juan Mata could be an example of that. Jose, for whatever reason, has not been given the tools that he wanted. Now, you can make a case for and against that being right or wrong. I'm not here to do that. I'm literally just here to talk about the three things that I think a manager needs. He hasn't had the patience from the fans, and I think we'll soon see from the board as well. Two trophies in his first season weren't enough to buy him any time. Coming second in his second season with a tally enough that would win a league in previous seasons, so what? A lot of fans don't care. They've got an issue with the style of play. They've got an issue with his attitude. They've got an issue with the fact that a lot of players aren't playing anywhere near their potential. There's no one looks outstanding. There's a very little excitement going on around the club. That's not enough. It's 2 years and a few months. Belief. Now, Jose does not have the belief of the fans. I can't say that's universal, but I reckon there's probably an extremely high percentage of fans that don't believe in the guy versus those who do believe in the guy. Now, no one expected a dynasty. What we did expect was to challenge and maybe even deliver a title, and then it would probably bounce. So when he hasn't delivered a title, the team hasn't become that rock-solid, hard-to-beat side. No one believes that he's going to be here after this season, and no one believes that he can build for the future for sustained success, which should be the goal, like I said, of any club. When we look at our competitors in the league and we add those three key requirements, we can see them: patience, belief, resources. At City, has Pep had that? Yeah, he's had that. They believe in him. They've given him an ungodly amount of resources while he's been there, but they, because of the early appointments of the directors of football, worked towards him coming. He was a long-term strategy, and I said before he came, right or wrong, the fact that they've had a plan to get that guy in means he's always going to get patience, he's always going to be given resources, and the fact they've got a plan is just better than not having a plan, which I feel like we have at times. He's working with directors of football he worked at Barcelona. There's a hierarchy and a structure being put in place to allow him to be successful. At Liverpool, despite not winning anything, despite pretty ordinary finishes, despite a start that was no better than Brendan Rodgers, Jurgen Klopp has got the belief of the club's fans and the board, and they're backing him, and they got to a Champions League final on the back of that belief last season. They've bought into his vision. They believe in what he's trying to do. They enjoy the style of play. So regardless of whether he wins anything, he's getting the patience. He's got the belief. And this summer we really saw him backed with the resources that he needs to try and improve them on the pitch. Now you can even see it at Spurs with Pochettino. Now, before everyone starts commenting that they didn't sign anybody this season, I'd argue with you that Spurs starting 11's actually fantastic. And it would cost you probably 150, 200 million to directly improve that starting 11. The way people go on about the defence and the Barry Beckham and Dembele, one of the most underrated players in the league, and Eriksen, everyone can't stop wanking over, and Dele Alli, and the best striker that's ever laced a pair of boots up in Harry Kane. How do you directly and obviously improve that Spurs team? So maybe they didn't sign anyone because they didn't think it was overly necessary, and I would say that. I think they need depth. But he's got patience, and he's got the belief, and he's got a lot of the resources already in the starting 11. So I think you could make the case that all three of those key requirements are there at Tottenham for Pochettino. Now, changing only Mourinho at United. And I think that change is probably required now, because I don't have the belief he can turn this around. And I certainly don't think he's going to have that sustained long-term success here, even if he could turn it around. I just don't think he's going to turn it around. Changing him alone is not going to lead to success for United. Absolutely not. Nailed on. Because there's deeper issues at play at United. Now, Fergie, as we said earlier, was a long-term target of United. Do we have a long-term anything? Jose was an opportunistic appointment. Zidane, if he comes in, feels like an opportunistic appointment. Even Van Gaal felt like an opportunistic appointment. We're not set up to be successful long-term. The Glazers need the Champions League qualification to maintain cash flow from sponsors, and have no interest in becoming the dominant winners that we witnessed under Sir Alex Ferguson. They're not football guys. Impatience of fans is a massive factor in this, I really feel. But I think a smart manager could leapfrog that. They could set expectations correctly, or they could buy themselves some patience and some belief by stating what their goal was. Jose came in and said, I want to win everything. So he can't really blame fans when they're going, you ain't winning everything. You said you wanted to win everything. You're not doing it. But if a manager came in and had realistic expectations and allowed the patience, now, not everyone's going to get it. If Zidane comes in and the rumour of him bringing Evra in is correct, I think that could be genius. He'd buy a lot of love for that, and he might see a legitimate rebound in the confidence and the mentality of the staff alone, which you often get when you change a manager. But I still don't know if you're set up for the long-term success if you do that. You might finish higher in the league. You might pick up a trophy. But the structure still isn't there to go on and be a long-term success. Now, I think having Evra in the dressing room, if Zidane did it, he's a guy that knows United. He knows the standards, the expectations. He also has the personality to make you want to come into work in the morning. Can you imagine after that Derby result, after the West Ham result, how many players coming into training want to avoid eye contact with Jose, keep their head down, look at the phone, be busy, not want to talk to the guy? Evra's old school. Evra comes from that Sir Alex Ferguson mentality of, I'm going to absolutely tear shreds off you in the dressing room, and then tomorrow I'm going to be asking you about the horse racing and things like that. It's forgotten. There's no grudges. And I think Evra understands that, gets that. He's part of that. He understands work ethic, and he understands the need for things to be quite light. I think he'd be a massive asset at the club if that was the case. But again, I don't think he's set up with Zidane. I mean, there's other things that he could come in and help Zidane with. Being an English speaker, and I don't think Zidane is, he could help him translate, and I think that'd be very useful for him. Regardless, we don't even know if he's a good coach. Don't even know if he's ever coached his kids' team. Like, we have no idea what he'd be like as a coach. I think as a personality that understands United, there could be a lot of good reasons, especially if it's been quite serious under Jose. Someone like Evra coming up and just being different might have a real good response. But again, it's not setting us up for the long term. Now, another route, and I'm not saying I support this, I'm literally just giving you an example of something that could happen and what that person could do to buy themselves some patience and get some belief, is, let's say Ryan Giggs as an example. He could come in and set the expectation level something really realistic, and he could say, look, instead of saying I'm going to win the quadruple this season and not lose a game and not concede a goal, he could come in and say this team needs a lot of work, and he could say we've got an amazing talents in the academy, and in 5 years time Mason Greenwood's going to be part of my first team, Dylan Levitt is part of my first team, all these players could be part of my first team, this is the vision I have, we're going to do it the United way, we're going to do it with bringing youth, and we're going to play exciting football, but I need 5 years. You need to give me 5 years to turn this around, because realistically that can be how long it needs to build some sustained foundations to go forward and actually achieve long term success. That would buy him patience. That might even buy people the belief in him. But again, we can't address the resources thing. Are the Glazers going to be able to give him the resources? Because Sir Alex didn't do it with 26 youth players that were all birthed in his own womb that he carried for 9 months through pregnancy. He blended good English talent with good foreign talent, as well as local foreign and English talent that he brought through the academy. There's always a blend. There's not one holistic way to do it, ever. It's not about buying everybody. It's not about bringing everyone through your academy. There's always a blend. And that's what United have been like for the last 60, 70 years. I think it all stems back to the Glazers. I think they need to stop thinking that minimum expectations are good enough, that you cannot compete with clubs that are striving for excellence when you're happy with coming fourth. You cannot have a finance guy running a football club. You need a football guy running a football club, and the rest of the club needs to work to establish excellence on the football pitch and not be the other way around, where we're trying to establish and maintain financial dominance. The issue is complicated as fuck, man, because the players are also culpable in this. As Roy Keane said this week, there's no excuses. You pull that shirt on, you give 100%. You had an argument, asked, give 100%. The tactics aren't right, asked. You played in the wrong position, asked, give 100%. Wear the Manchester United badge with pride. You're playing for your family, you're playing for your local city, you're playing for one of the greatest football clubs the world ever seen. Give 100%, but some aren't, and some are. You know which ones are. To take Manchester United forward, we need leadership. We need owners that care about being number one and not just on the Forbes list. We need a CEO that works for the football club, not the bank. We need a vision of what we want to be as a club. We need a manager that can achieve that, and we need players that have the confidence, the ability, and the desire to wear the red of United and everything that that represents. Right. On a slightly lighter note, this video is brought to you by the Perfect 10 Game on The Sportsman, and you can win 10 grand by predicting the results of 10 games, not the score, just the results, that's win, lose or draw, and you'll get 10 large, not only that, but I'm also giving away some prizes to whoever tops my private league, and you can find the link for both of those in the description, just play the game, or come and join my league. Like I said, you can win without even winning. Just whoever tops my league at the end of this month and next month and December is going to be given a shirt, probably the home or away shirt. I'll leave it up to whoever wins to decide. Terms and conditions apply, obviously, over 18s and all that good stuff. But let's get into it then. Here's my picks for this week. It's always a mishmash of games. It's on an absolute knife edge. I got 5 right last week. I think the average is about 4. A couple of people got 7. No one's getting anywhere near 10 at the moment. So have a go. See if you guys think you can do it better. First game we've got then is Crystal Palace against Wolves. Now, although they look twice the team they were this time last year, you do got to worry about Palace home record coming into this one. They've just picked up a single point in 3 games when they played at home this season, losing to a really poor Southampton side in the process. Wolves lost the way out. We saw them play United off the park at Old Trafford, so I think you're probably going to have to back Nuno's men here. They look good, they're in decent form. Wolves will win. Leicester against Everton. Now, Leicester have won all 3 games on the bounce in all competitions, and there's a real chance that they could make it 4 here. I've underestimated the hell out of them every time they've been in perfect 10, and I am not going to be doing the same again this time around. James Maddison has looked really impressive so far this season. It's difficult to imagine that Everton's pretty unsettled back line is he going to have enough to deal with the threat that he offers? So I'm not underestimating him again. Leicester for the win this time around. Millwall against Villa. Now I definitely expect Villa to take all 3 points here. Only Preston and Hull have lost more games than Millwall. They've won one, they've drawn four, they've lost six so far this season. And after the sacking of Steve Bruce, you're going to expect to see a little bit of a bounce back from that Villa side as they galvanise and look to restart their season after a bit of an underwhelming start. They've got Tuan Zabe, they've got McGinn, they've got Tammy Abraham, all picking up regular minutes, and there's potential for this to be an exciting young side. And I reckon that could begin this weekend. Definitely going with Villa on that one. Norwich against Stoke then. So only fourth place West Brom and the league leaders at Leeds have taken more points away from Carrow Road this season. And I expect that still to be the case after Stoke's visit this weekend, especially since the Potters are looking for their first away win of the season. Norwich are just 4 points adrift of top spot coming into this, and I would expect this weekend's game is not one that they'll be slipping up on. Norwich getting the win for me in this one. Preston versus Wigan then. If it wasn't the Championship, it'd be an absolute no-brainer. There's a massive 22 goals difference between these two teams, with Wigan on plus 12, Preston on minus 10. Preston actually managed to score 2+ goals in their last 4 games, but they just can't keep them out of the other end. If you score 2 goals a game consistently all season, you'd imagine you're going to turn it round at some point. I just don't see that being this weekend. So what I'm going to say is Wigan in this instance, away win. QPR against Derby. QPR a bit of a regular on this perfect 10 game, so you know, maybe we're going to get one of them right at some point. I think there could be a bit of an upset on the card here. Frank Lampard's Derby are clear favourites for this. They sit 9 places higher in the league than McLaren's men. However, there's only 4 points difference between the two sides, and QPR have had a difficult run of fixtures leading up to this. They're definitely a team that have turned a corner since the start of the season in terms of how they're playing. A win might be pushing it a little bit, but I definitely fancy them to pick up a point. So I'm going for a draw in this one. Blackpool against Rochdale. Absolutely nothing in between these two. This is one of the proper knife fixtures that makes perfect 10. So interesting and so hard to predict. If in doubt, go with a home advantage, and that is what I'm doing here. Blackpool to take it against Rochdale. Peterborough against Barnsley. This one's going to be proper close again, because that's what they have, and they've got near identical records this season. Although Peterborough do have over Barnsley, is a bit of an embarrassment of riches in terms of strikers. Matt Godden and Jason Cummins bagged 13 and 11 matches so far this season, and that might be the difference. So I am going with Peterborough. Plymouth against Wimbledon. Plymouth go into this still looking for their first win of the season. Wimbledon have averaged a point a game, and I think they'll get exactly that out of their trip to Plymouth. Draw in this instance. Finally then, Wickham against Burton. Now Burton have been very much all or more often nothing this season, only drawing 2 games so far. Wickham however have drawn more games than any other team with 6, and again I think that'll be the case this weekend. There isn't much to choose between these two, and we haven't had many draws, and there's often quite a few draws in this, isn't there? So I'm going to say draw. I don't think there'll be anything in it whatsoever. How many goals are going to be scored as a tiebreaker? I'm going to say 34 goals will be the total of all of these 10 games this weekend. What do you think? Let me know in the comments. If you're joining in as well, screenshot me your team, send it me on Twitter with a hashtag perfect10, and I'll retweet everybody that does. Come and join my league. There's about 100 people in the league already. You have got a good chance of getting it, because this is proper hard. If you think you know your stuff, come and join in. Thank you guys for watching. Make sure to like the video, subscribe if you're new around here, and I will see you in the next one. Laters.